Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
When the U.S. shot down that falling spy satellite last week, did you watch that when that happened? The government denied that it was meant to show off our weapons capabilities. Rather, it said it was just to protect humanity from randomly falling debris. By shooting it down, they were more able to control where the pieces of the satellite came down and have it be more likely that they came down over the ocean or unpopulated areas, as was the case. But coming from the U.S. government, which has declared its right to weaponize space in the past, this denial still met with some skepticism and presented a diplomatic challenge. We're going to follow up on that now with Teresa Hitchens. She is director of the Center for Defense Information, generally an anti-war group, and she argues that the war on terror has distracted us from recent shifts into space on the part of both the U.S. and other countries' militaries. The prospect of space wars is real, she says, and it deserves some serious attention. And she has a piece in the upcoming issue of Scientific American called Space Wars, Coming to the Sky Near You. Teresa Hitchens, welcome to WNYC. Hello there.
Thanks for having me.
Let's start with that spy satellite. The government denies that there's any connection between our shooting it down and strutting our weaponization of space. Do you buy it?
Well, I think there were probably numerous factors that went into that decision. While most experts agree that the risk from the hydrazine tank, the fuel tank, were very, very small, the risk to human life almost vanishingly small, I can see that there might have been political consideration of what might happen in the worst case. In other words, given how the Bush administration was pilloried for their lack of proactive response in Katrina, they might have felt some political pressure. You know, if the worst case happened, then they would be blamed for not trying to do anything. So I think there were political considerations, but I don't think it was lost on anyone making this decision that this was also a safe way, if you will, to demonstrate our capabilities against satellites to the Chinese.
And to put this in some political context, a lot of people, of course, did hear about the satellite because it was this sensational thing, a falling satellite and shooting it down. But probably a lot fewer people know that last year the Bush administration released a national space policy, or actually 2 years ago, 2006, and they made a point of rejecting, quote, new legal regimes or other restrictions that seek to prohibit or limit U.S. access to or use of space, unquote. So in effect, the U.S. is kind of boldly declaring its right to weaponize space.
Yes, the National Space Policy isn't the only document that confirms that the U.S. continues to hold open the possibility of using our various arsenals against a satellite in space. There are several documents that were published even earlier by the Air Force, one in particular called Counter Space Operations Doctrine, which is essentially a blueprint for how to take out other people's satellites.
And going back even further in history, I mean, we could go all the way back to the creation of NASA by President Eisenhower, because at that time he was worried that space would be a stage for waging war, and he wanted to establish a non-military presence. Isn't that the origin?
That's definitely true. Eisenhower was very leery of giving particularly the Air Force any programs for weaponizing space, and partly it was due to the fact that he was very, very concerned about legitimizing spy satellites. He wanted to make sure that spy satellites were seen as peaceful uses of space, because he recognized that they could be very, very useful in keeping a lid on competition with the Soviet Union.
So spy satellites were seen as peaceful and in a separate category from actual weapons or weapons-based or land-based systems that could actually go into space. So when we talk about weaponizing of space, what are we actually talking about in terms of the current situation with the United States and China or whatever? Is it just these kinds of anti-ballistic missiles like the U.S. used to shoot down the satellite, which are really land-based, or are we talking about putting actual weapons in orbit?
Well, that sort of depends on who you talk to. There have been discussions in the U.S. Air Force and elsewhere about the possibility of basing weapons in orbit. But currently, it seems that the focus on disrupting satellite activities in the nations that we know are doing research are centered on ground-based things that we call anti-satellites or anti-satellite weapons or ASATs. Mm-hmm. That's because the fact of the matter is that putting weapons in orbit is very, very difficult. It's very expensive. They're vulnerable to both space debris or to someone else's ground-based ASAT, and they cost a lot of money. So
certainly in traditional military terms, you want to take the high ground. So if you want to be able to aim at anything on Earth, put something in space. I mean, at least in military theory.
Yeah, I mean, and indeed, there have been pushes by the U.S. Air Force and the Army and others going back to the dawn of the space age. That's the theory. Again, given the difficulties that you face with trying to put something in space, particularly some kind of weapon to strike ground targets, it hasn't yet, at least, become really feasible to do that.
Now, China also shot down a satellite in a way that I think is causing much more concern around the world than what the U.S. did last week, correct?
That is correct. Last January, the Chinese shot down or blew up one of their own satellites, a weather satellite, and that satellite was in a very populated orbit about 800 kilometers above the Earth, and the destruction of the satellite created an enormous amount of space debris, and that was the real fear from the other nations, was that this Chinese space debris would endanger other people's satellites. So what the Chinese did was highly irresponsible. That is not the case with the U.S. Interception of the satellite. They did it at a very low level, a very low altitude, so that the debris would fall primarily back to Earth. They did it over the ocean so that it wouldn't fall on land. And they actually warned people that they were going to do this. So they went out with a blast of diplomats across the world to tell other nations what we were going to do and our rationale, or at least the U.S. government stated rationale for doing so. And the Chinese, of course, gave no one any notice at all, and in fact, didn't even acknowledge that they had done it, despite the fact that we had seen it for 12 days. Different issues there.
Why did the Chinese blow up their satellite?
Well, again, that's one of those things that sort of depends on who you ask. It is unclear. The Chinese have not given a very clear or coherent statement about what exactly they were trying to do. They've been working on that technology since the 80s when the U.S. First started the Star Wars program, and it's been going on for a long time. What prompted them to test that satellite at the time that they did is opaque. Some people think that it was simply that the technology was ready and the PLA wanted to try it out. Others think that the Chinese were trying to send a signal to the United States that we are not going to be alone in attempting to dominate space if anyone's going to attempt to do it. So there were a number of different possibilities, and as I said, the Chinese haven't been exactly clear about what their intentions were.
You just mentioned the timing. And by the way, we can take some phone calls on this. Anybody want to talk about the potential for space wars? We are talking with Teresa Hitchens, author of an upcoming Scientific American article called Space Wars, Coming to a Sky Near You, and our phone number 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692. The timing of that Chinese action, it was just a short time after the Bush administration's national space policy that we were talking about, rejecting legal restrictions limiting U.S. access to space for military purposes. So do you think China was trying to make a statement there? Is that what you were just implying, to get up there too and do this thing and say, hey, if this is good for the goose, it's good for the gander?
There are some people who feel that way. I mean, I think the prevailing line of thought is that really this was pushed by the weapons developers, and because the technology was ready and they were eager to test it.
In China.
In China, yes. Yeah. But on the other hand, I can't imagine that there wasn't some discussion of what political signals that might send. It just doesn't make sense to me that there wouldn't have been any kind of discussion about that.
Mm-hmm. And you can post a comment on our comments page as well on our website at WNYC.org. Click on Brian Lehrer Show. And here's one right now that says, Ms. Hitchens, did you think the U.S. media did a decent job of covering the shootdown announced by the military last week? This writer says, I was surprised that that day's coverage, including NPR, with the exception of Steve Inskeep's one report, stated simply that the satellite, which carried dangerous fuel, was successfully shot down. No mention of the point you are speaking to today. The fun bit, he says.
I actually was a bit surprised at the U.S. media coverage. I think that the government's PR campaign was obviously pretty successful. There were some outlets that did raise questions from the space experts about the real hazard of the hydrazine, and I might note that the government did not provide any kind of risk analysis for people to judge, you know, the costs and the risks, et cetera. And I was also a bit surprised that there wasn't more coverage of potential political fallout, although I will say that the other nations, with the exception of Russia and China, have been very quiet. I think part of the problem here is when you spin something as a life or death matter, as protecting public safety, it makes it very hard to raise any kinds of questions because people are going to say to you, well, you know, if they had one in a million chance of preventing one loss of life, shouldn't they have done it? So it becomes very difficult to raise questions and criticism under those circumstances.
Let's take a phone call. Robert in Brooklyn, you're on WNYC. Hi, Robert.
Hello, thank you. Hello, Ms. Hitchens?
Yes, hi.
Hi, listen, this is a satellite which was shot down. Now, my understanding, it would be a bigger problem, a MIRV. Now, to shoot down a MIRV, I think you'd have to, wasn't it true you'd have to have an ABM close to the launching site? Like, if it was North Korea, you'd have to have an ABM site in South Korea. And also, to shoot down multiple warheads, possibly thousands of them coming in from outer space, are there still proposals to have, like, lasers in orbit? Isn't that the only realistic way to shoot down warheads from a MIRV?
Well, that's a good question. And
and remind us, what does MIRV mean?
A multiple independent reentry vehicle. It's a nuclear weapon that's equipped with a number of warheads carrying nuclear weapons in them. So instead of just one, you have several.
So when the Reagan administration first proposed the missile defense that some people call Star Wars, that was aimed at being able to stop these kinds of multiple nuclear warheads from falling at their targets?
Well, that was one of the reasons that the space-based laser was proposed, as well as other kinds of space-based weapons, was the idea that you wanted to try to hit the incoming missile before it released its warheads,
mm-hmm.
So very early in its stage. And it is true that it's much harder to do that from far away. It's obviously not too simple to place, anti-missile weapons close to China's border. So the space option was proposed. The space-based laser program was canceled years ago now, essentially because they figured out that they don't have the technology. Lasers require enormous power, and that power is provided by chemicals, and you need vast quantities of those chemicals. We currently have a program to try to put a laser on an airplane, and the difficulty has been that the system is so heavy, the airplane can't carry it. So they pretty much gave up, or at least in public gave up, working on any kind of space-based laser system. The Bush administration has, however, continued to ask for funding to develop space-based interceptors, and these would essentially be missiles based on an orbital platform that would be designed, again, to shoot down these incoming weapons very early in their stage. They have failed to get that money. The Congress has refused to provide them money for that program consistently for the past several years, primarily because the Congress is concerned about the implications for weaponizing space.
Huh. Teresa Hitchens, my guest on WNYC from the Generally Anti-War Center for Defense Information. She has an article coming up in Scientific American called Space Wars, Coming to the Sky Near You. And Derek in Manhattan, you're on WNYC. Hey, Derek.
Hello. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I wanted to point out to Ms. Hitchens that we might be not talking about the right approach here in terms of orientation, the most important of which is Space Command, the sixth military organization besides the Army, Navy, Marine Corps, Air Force, and Coast Guard. It's an actual organization whose edict is to defend America from space. Second, the Columbia disaster, the next shuttle program after Columbia was due to take up a significant amount of plutonium. And there was a cover story as to why we needed so much plutonium in space, but the central issue was that it appeared to be a way to get a weapons-grade, weapons amount of plutonium into space for weapons.
Well, I think I would have to disagree with that. Space Command actually was, the U.S. Space Command was abolished some time ago, and the responsibility for space was given back to the Air Force. It's now called Air Force Space Command, but it is subordinate to STRATCOM, which is a strategic command, the command that's also responsible for our nuclear weapons. As far as the NASA program with regards to the use of plutonium, it's my understanding that the nuclear reactors that are used to power deep space probes use very, very small amounts of nuclear fuel. And indeed, we don't have any other really good way of getting these probes outside of sort of cislunar space, that is, beyond the moon. So I don't think that the program that NASA is running with regard to deep space exploration is a cover for weapons. I will tell you that there is quite a big rivalry between DOD and NASA, and I'm not, although there are some cooperative programs, it has never been easy to foster that cooperation.
Alvin in Manhattan, you're on WNYC. Hi, Alvin.
Yes, good day. We've had a satellite constellation in place for decades. It's the GPS satellites, and while most people know it for helping them to drive to where they're going, they're used to guide many of our tactical and strategic weapons at ground level, smart missiles and so forth. Now, if some country were to develop a means either by shooting the constellation down or by a directed beam weapon, what would you propose as being your policy? I mean, this is a current threat or a potential threat in the near future. What would you propose as a policy, whether it would be an act of war or what, to defend the GPS system?
Well, I do think that satellites are vulnerable, and everyone pretty much knows that. The GPS, interestingly, is one of the lesser vulnerable satellite constellations, partly because of the way its orbit works and partly because they've built redundancy into the system. There are, I think, 32 of these things on orbit, and it would be very difficult for an opponent to knock out entire GPS coverage. Also, you know, we do take measures to protect military satellites. There are things you can do. You can harden them against radiation, for example. You can have redundant electronic systems. You can have shutters to protect their cameras. Some satellites have the ability to move if they had warning. But by and large, satellites are vulnerable. And it doesn't necessarily make logical sense to think that an anti-satellite weapon is going to protect your satellite. It's not. An anti-satellite weapon is an offensive weapon. So I would say that one of the things that we need to really start considering are some kinds of diplomatic and legal measures that would help provide protection for satellites.
Like what?
Well, I mean, one of the things that's being discussed in the international community right now is a concept called rules of the road or space traffic management, which would require data exchange. It would make certain kinds of operations in space illegal, if you will. I'm personally very fond of discussions to try to ban the testing and the use of debris-creating anti-satellite weapons, because I know that they pose a danger to all operating satellites, and it's very difficult to protect against them, if not impossible.
So before you go, and we're almost out of time, do any of the current presidential candidates have a stance on this?
Most of the Democrats were asked questions by the Council for a Livable World, and I believe their answers are up on their website. But to a person, or at least to a person who answered the question, they are all opposed to weapons in space.
But it's been seen as a foregone conclusion. Do you think that a Democratic president would really reverse the declaration by the Bush administration that the U.S. has a right to weaponize space?
I actually think that there's some chance that a Democratic administration would rethink our national space strategy. You know, the Bush administration has been sort of famous for rejecting treaties of all kinds. I can't imagine that would be the same with a Democratic administration. I would assume that they would be willing to consider the use of diplomacy and economic power, soft power, to try to prevent this kind of a contest. I mean, the fact of the matter is that while any spacefaring power can obtain the capabilities to shoot down other people's satellites, it's really not a world that anyone would benefit from living in, with all their satellites at risk and with the risk of creating so much debris in a space war that you could make space inoperable. I mean, imagine if we lost the ability to use satellites. We would be in really big trouble.
Teresa Hitchens, related to Christopher?
No.
Author of a forthcoming article in Scientific American called Space Wars, Coming to the Sky Near You. Is that the March edition?
Yes, it's the March edition of Scientific American, which hopefully will be on the newsstand soon.
Thanks a lot for coming on with us.
Thanks for having me.
Well, you know what Pakistan did? Pakistan actually shut down YouTube for part of last Sunday. We'll talk about how that happened, why it happened, and its implications in a minute. Brian Lehrer on WNYC.